Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely. If there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, alleluia, that's where our mind should be dwelling. St. Paul says to think about these things. And surely he would agree that we should talk about them too. That's our intention every Saturday on Call Me Catholic, to talk about what is good and true. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour, hopefully a lively hour of conversation, intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. Got my buddy in the studio with me, Jimmy G, everybody's favorite engineer and chief fact checker. Wave to everybody, Jimmy G.
We are here to bring the lively this morning.
Bring on
we're
the lively.
We're bringing it.
Yeah, we're bringing on the lively.
If you're not lively, well, we're going to make you lively.
Well, and you know what? You can watch us get lively if you'd like to. If you are near a computer and your hands are free, go over and check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. And there's a little link that Marvelous Matt, our studio assistant, has put up. You just click that link and it will take you to a page where you can live stream the show. And then it will go away after the show is done, but it's fun for a while.
It never goes away. It's there somewhere.
It's somewhere
lurking.
It's somewhere in cyberspace. Now, you cannot see on the stream that we are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope. I wish we had a view with a window in here, but we don't. We are high up on the Tower of Hope and the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in the Diocese of Orange, Orange County, California. We are the OC. When did we become the OC, by the way? Was it during that show, the OC?
Yeah, well, I know that show kind of made that phrase popular.
Yeah, I guess that was like in the early 2003
or something.
Like that. Yeah. We weren't the OC before that. And we didn't like it when it came out like that, but now we've adopted it.
It depends on how hip you are, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm hip. I got three hip sons that keep me hip. Hey, we are getting some winter weather here in Southern California. I always like to give you a weather report because we're sort of contra season here in Southern California. But we're getting some nice chilly weather, and I do embrace the chill of winter. Those low 60s really set your teeth chattering, don't they?
A little bit of rain, a little bit.
I love seasonal weather because I think God created distinct seasons for a reason. They kind of represent the natural cycle of life or the natural cycle of our moods. You have the spring when the world is fresh and new and the sun emerges to beckon us all outside. And then summer when we hit our stride. It's warm, it's playful, active. Fall is what I would call the most aesthetic season, when the colors of nature are so bright and proud. The temperature drops and we kind of slow down and just enjoy the landscape around us. And winter. We are here in the middle of winter. Winter draws us back into ourselves. It's the contemplative season. You know, nature goes dormant. But hey, even though the grass is dead and the trees are barren, they are still growing. The roots are still growing underneath. The roots are digging deeper and searching harder for moisture and nutrients because during winter, the ground is frozen. And I believe these four seasons are truly God's metaphor for the cycle of our lives. Winter, spring, summer, fall, they all have a place in our life every year. As God says in Ecclesiastes, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap that which is planted. Having said all that, I think winter is also a time when people can easily feel the blues, get the winter doldrums. Mm. It's cold, shut in, restless, dark. I think it sometimes has to do with a lack of light. We have a lot less light in the winter because the days are shorter. Now, we're going to dig a little deeper into that subject of winter depression and other serious mental disorders and how we can all help each other through these passages or get help ourselves. And we have a fine, very qualified guest with us today to explore that compelling and really relevant subject. Dr. Louise Dunn is the director of the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline. It's a 24-hour free crisis intervention service where any person can call anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's located here on the Christ Cathedral campus, and it has a fascinating history, and Dr. Dunn will be talking about how this valuable resource was founded and how it works. And you'll be invited to call in to participate in that conversation. If you want to write down the number now, it's 714-282-6034. This is a rich subject, and you may want to jump into the conversation. It's 714-282-6034. We're going to talk about mental health and how our church is addressing this concern in our modern culture, and specifically how New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline is helping people. But first up, it is our Call Me Catholic countdown of the week, which is going to segue into our theme of mental health by sharing the top five saints who suffered from depression. Now, it's hard to limit that just to five, but that's where I get to choose. Many, many of our good saints were plagued by different and difficult mental disorders, and especially depression. And it's, I think it's important and valuable to revisit their story because, you know, we all hit the wall sometimes. Our thoughts get dark and we don't see the light at the end of a very, very long tunnel. Sometimes it's just circumstantial, situational, and sometimes it's just our body not calibrating well. But we can always take inspiration from our good saints who have gone before us. So here we go. My top five saints who suffered from depression and melancholy among many.
I'm glad you're using the mellow one.
Yeah, that works. We don't want to be too upbeat.
No, not too bright.
Okay. So, I mean, there were so many to choose from because, you know, they all struggled in some way. That's how they reached God. That's how God reached them. But number five on the list would be the Jesuit priest, Saint Noel Chabanel. Now, he was one of the North American martyrs, and he worked among the Huron Indians. Most missionaries become very sympathetic toward those whom they are ministering to, right? But, you know, they become one with them, kindred spirits, so to speak. But this was not the case for Father Chabanel. He felt this strong repugnance toward the Indians and their customs, and he really struggled with their language, could not figure it out, and that inflicted him with this enduring sadness and disappointment.
Wow.
Yeah, he lived with that during his whole ministry. He called it a spiritual suffocation. Now, how did he respond? He responded by making a solemn vow never to give up or to leave his assignment. And he kept that vow until the day of his martyrdom.
Wow.
Yeah. Powerful, huh? Okay, number four would be Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton. You probably know her as the first native-born American to be canonized by the church. After she was widowed, she went on to establish the first Catholic schools in America. She's a great patroness for our country. But young Elizabeth Ann was lonely and melancholy and faced periods of long depression with thoughts of suicide during her adolescence, actually. But she found journaling, music, and surrounding herself with God's gifts of the seashore, shells, and nature, that helped her cope in her youth. Adolescence is tough on people.
These are very helpful stories to hear that, you know, these saints went through these issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good to identify and to draw strength from their model. Okay. So number three would be Saint Monica. Now, this is just speculation, friends, because I don't think Saint Monica is listed among the saints who suffered from depression. But Saint Monica was the mother of Saint Augustine, who was such a philandering scoundrel in his youth and young adulthood. And she was a devout, very, very devout Christian. We know she prayed for him unceasingly, and that eventually paid off. But I'm guessing, as a mother, she must have been very depressed and despondent over his lifestyle before he saw the light, so to speak. Okay, so that's my own entry into that.
Probably a pretty good guesstimate
I think so. Yeah. Okay, number two, this might surprise some people, is Saint Ignatius of Loyola, founder of the Jesuit order, a very powerful personality, a soldier, a leader. But he was one who was given to feelings of deep restlessness and grief. He suffered what could be called depression. Ignatius said that God cannot cause desolation, but he may allow it for his own purposes, like to remind us of our profound need for him or to shake up a sinner to bring about his repentance. And Ignatius's advice, which came from personal experience, was to persevere in patience. The double P's, persevere in patience. Not always that easy, but
no.
The will can be conjured up during these times. In his spiritual exercises, which is, you know, just a classic formula for retreats and spiritual disciplines, he offers some more practical advice for those who suffer from depression. So you can check it out, The Spiritual Exercises of Saint Ignatius. Okay, and my number one saint who really, really battled depression would be Saint Teresa of Calcutta.
Right.
Yeah, we know her as the saint who tirelessly rescued and lifted up victims of poverty and neglect on the streets of Calcutta. She brought them joy, just joy. She always radiated God's love. She never grew weary of her mission. But her letters to her spiritual director, which came out several years ago, revealed that except for one short period, Saint Teresa was afflicted with a deep sense of God's absence, like for the last 50 years of her life, which can be described as depression, in the very least. As Saint Teresa, began to advance in her life and her suffering, she began to understand more clearly her vocation to suffer the passion of Christ. And she wrote this. This is a quote. If I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness. I will continually be absent from heaven to light the light of those in darkness on earth. Isn't that Mother Teresa always projecting about how that was also, I think, how she coped. She always just was other-centered, you know, not dwelling on her own
absolutely
grief or
a modern saint.
Yeah, so that makes her my number one saint who suffered depression and can lift up and console those here on earth. She said she was going to do it, and I know she's right there by your side if you are suffering from this. And remember that if you're helping or living with someone who is suffering from some of these disorders, you know, introduce them to the saints, because I think there's consolation there. We don't always go to that dark place here on Call Me Catholic, but we stand in solidarity with those who suffer from mental illness. Gosh, as a church, we embrace you. You have much to teach us, and we have resources that can help you. By the way, we invite you to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. We do not offer counseling on our Facebook page, but we do connect you with links that have been mentioned on the show and pictures that will help you get to know our guests better.
We offer referrals.
We offer a little departure from your day. Yeah, we do have referrals. So join our family. Give us a like on facebook.com/callmecatholic. It's the rage. And maybe it's just the right antidote for your winter blues. Stay with us, because up next, we're going to be talking with Dr. Louise Dunn, who runs the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline. This is the first church-based crisis hotline in America. You want to hear this story. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, everybody, and greetings to you all in this mid-January chill. It's cold out there, and it's dark, and it's winter to most of you around the world, except if you're in Australia or anywhere in the Southern Hemisphere. Then it's summer. I am Peggy Normandin, and this is the Call Me Catholic show. It's meant to warm the cockles of your heart no matter what season it is, but it is late January, and that means a lot of people out there are suffering from the winter blues, or even worse, clinical depression. Winter just seems to exacerbate that condition. We have a guest today who understands all the circumstances that influence the onset of depression, melancholy, breakdowns, and other mental health disorders. Dr. Louise Dunn is the director of the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline, located right here in the Tower of Hope on the Christ Cathedral campus and run by Catholic Charities. The New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline, which was founded in 1968, has a fascinating history. To start with, it's the first church-based crisis hotline in the country. But I'm going to let Dr. Dunn share the particulars of that history with you. Dr. Louise Dunn, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You know, I was so fascinated to learn just not long ago about the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline that you're our neighbor here in the Tower of Hope, and you've been here a lot longer than we have. Its history is really compelling. Can you tell our listeners how that got started, the crisis hotline in 1968?
Absolutely. Back in about 1967, Mrs. Schuler, who was the wife of Dr. Schuler of the Christ Cathedral, Garden Grove Community Church at the time, they had a parishioner who was going through some issues, and she was doing some pastoral counseling with that person. You have to think back when there were no cell phones and no answer machines and all of that, and Mrs. Schuler had gone off to the store, and apparently this lady was trying to get a hold of her, and she was deeply depressed, and she left a note saying, "There was no one for me to talk with. I can't handle it anymore," and she took her own life. Mm. The Schulers were devastated, and Mrs. Schuler at that time said to her husband, "There has to be somewhere, any time of the day or night, that somebody can call, and there'll be someone to listen to them." That planted the seed, which actually the idea for New Hope happened immediately. They trained a lot of people, but it was there was no such thing as a crisis field or really much in the way of crisis hotlines at that time. So it was a brand new thing.
It was a learning
process.
Definitely.
And the idea of doing that from a church had never surfaced either.
Right, because it was the first church-based crisis hotline. So how did that translate? What did it look like? How did it open and begin to extend its resources to people?
Well, the first thing was they had to build the building. And Dr. Schuler
The Tower of Hope hadn't been built.
The Tower of Hope had not been built. Some of the other buildings were here, the original sanctuary. The Tower of Hope was built, and they had already trained some of the congregation members to be what we call today we call peer counselors. That time they just called them nice people, and they
good listeners.
They essentially gave them some pointers. And the day that the tower was commissioned, they actually started the New Hope Hotline in grand form. I have to say, Dr. Schuller, the showman,
exactly.
he had to do it in a big way. He had a flatbed semi-trailer out in the parking lot. They ran a phone line. Now think, no cordless anything. They had to actually run an actual line out to the parking lot. And there's a big cross on top of this building, a 90-foot cross, that had been put in place but not lit. And as the first phone call, Dr. Schuller dialed 714, which is still our number today. As the phone rang on the other side, the cross lit.
Oh.
And it, so you get, you know, hello, new
drama.
Hope, and boom, the cross lights. And Dr. Schuller says, a light that shines into the darkness, and boom, new hope started.
Wow. And how did they get the number out there for people to know how to reach them?
Just a lot of word of mouth.
Maybe in the telephone book, too. You know,
yeah,
in those
well,
days,
definitely yellow pages
books.
And that kind of thing. But initially, really started with being available to members of the congregation and then other churches. And then it just expanded because there was nothing like it. It expanded very rapidly.
We are talking with Dr. Louise Dunn, director of the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline that has been in operation here in the Tower of Hope on the Christ Cathedral campus for 50 years, offering free help to people facing personal troubles and depression. If you'd like to join our conversation, and I know many of you would, give us a call. The number is 714-282-6034. That's our hotline, 714-282-6034. Marvelous Matt, our call screener, will put you through to the conversation. So, Dr. Dunn, it started out with a handful of parishioners who were willing volunteers. What does this crisis hotline look like today? And by the way, when the Catholic Church took over the Christ Cathedral campus, we assumed the responsibility for that crisis hotline.
Yeah, there's a great story behind that, too. But what we look like today is we have about 40 volunteers who answer the calls. They are now trained in what we call a crisis intervention protocol, which sounds very, very big. We call it active listening. And it's actually something that anybody with the heart that cares about hurting people can do. As I said before, peer counselors, which means not professionals, but people who are trained specifically to help hurting people.
Well, that is a fascinating whole subject there, is how you train a volunteer to address a phone call that could lead to anywhere. But first I want to ask you about the history of these calls. Is there a record of all the calls that have been placed? Or do you keep a journal or something?
Well, we do record the fact that the calls come in, but as far as historic records, we don't have the full 50 years.
Well, what I'm getting at is that in 50 years, I think it would be interesting to observe the trends in the crises. So the one that triggered
sure.
the whole movement was suicide. And I'm sure there was a decade, and that is probably a reoccurring thing. But I also think that probably there were times when finances were driving the crises, where unplanned pregnancies might have been. And then now there's this terrible opioid epidemic in the country. So drugs are probably
yes,
playing into
definitely. It. There are peaks on particular issues that are going on. You're right about the finances. 2009 through that whole mortgage crisis, a lot of the calls centered on that. A lot of calls that more today center on homelessness,
mm-hmm.
Resources, food shortages. But the staples have always been relationship issues, mm-hmm. People feeling isolated. But we also, we run the gamut on talking to people who have different kinds of mental illness. Really, we handle everything from somebody just feeling sad and lonely to somebody literally wanting to take their own life in that moment.
So are there cues or even clues that tip you off to whether this is a circumstantial situation like a heartbreak? Or a mental disorder where they are really needing some professional intervention?
Oh, definitely. Our counselors are trained to do open-ended questions to get information from the person. And you can tell from the severity of what they're talking about. Very often, people that have been treating with therapists are very open about that. They'll say that right up front. And they have a diagnosis. They often give us that. As peer counselors, we don't make diagnoses or that kind of thing, but we can tell if the person is in a deeper amount of trouble where a professional is should be involved, and we do make referrals in those cases.
How many calls come in on an average?
It varies quite a bit, but we run about somewhere anywhere between 40 and 60 calls a day,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes around, especially right after the holidays, we have higher peaks than that.
I was going to ask you if there are, well, of course, there is that seasonal affective disorder.
Yes.
So that would mean that during the wintertime, you'd be getting more calls that are just sort
yes.
of
and,
affected by
really,
them.
Relationships are tested during the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And so people that are alone feel more lonely. People that don't get along with their families have more issues and those kinds of things.
What would you do if someone called and said, I'm beyond despairing right now. My husband left me. I'm here with my children. It's Christmas. I can't face another day.
Well, the very first thing that we do, we go immediately to assessment. Sometimes this sounds dramatic to people, but somebody putting it that way, first thing that one of my counselors would say is, are you having suicidal thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody isn't, they're very quick to go, oh, no, it's not that bad.
Okay.
If they are, they'll say, well, yeah, sometimes, and then tell me about that. So we get right into that conversation.
Yeah. Well, how long are these conversations? Can they go on for an hour sometimes? Or do you have a limit where
yes.
you say, okay, we're going to wrap this up?
Yes. If a person is what we would say imminently suicidal, and the qualification for that, they're having suicidal thoughts, they do have a plan, and they either don't tell us a time limit or they say, I'm thinking about doing it today. We do not have a time limit. We stay on until we feel that we've gotten that person into a safe situation. On our regular calls, what we would call a regular counseling call, easily could be 25 minutes, 30 minutes, if there are multiple issues, as much as 35 minutes. But a lot of our calls are just going to be 10 and 15 minutes.
Does every volunteer, and I want to get into the volunteer training and how you manage the volunteers, but do they have a list of resources right there? So a pregnancy shelter or a place where they can get lodging or?
Actually, we used to have that, and we used to have in the days of printing things. We had wonderful resources, but as everything has moved over to online, we're blessed to have something that's called the 211 service, where you can dial 211 from any telephone. They are resource experts, and we rely on them now because they can do it faster, they have more, and they call those resources every quarter
wow.
to update them.
211, I didn't
211.
Know that. So anybody can call 211 in
yeah.
and get local resources in their
local,
area.
In their area, exactly. And so that's been a tremendous blessing to us and to our callers.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned technology. Does technology can be a cure for some things, but it can also be the cause of a lot of despondency or self-hatred and misdiagnoses and things like
oh,
that.
Absolutely, yeah. The other problem with it is that people are using it to replace real relationships.
There you go.
And our human needs haven't changed. Technology has changed our abilities. But it's an irony that we're more connected than ever, and yet we're less connected than we've ever been.
Yeah. And it can feed a dark trend in your head. You know, you can go to the computer and find something that will justify just about any feeling you want to feel.
Yes.
And the impact of social media, where people are always looking at someone else's life and saying, wow, you know, I'm never going to be that happy every day like they are. Or my kids are never going to be as cute as her kids.
Yeah, because none of us are going to post things on, you know, the different social
Facebook
media,
that
Facebook, you know, or I'm not going to take the worst picture I ever had. Or
no, don't let them do it.
Bags
I do
under
not
my
let them
eyes,
do it.
You know,
do not let them do it, Jimmy G.
Yeah, I'm going to be on a beach with the sun behind me and all tan.
Margarita.
And, you know, looking good and,
yeah.
and with a big smile on my
it's
face.
It's artificial, though. I mean, it yeah. represents an artificial lifestyle.
I wanted to come back to that 211. That's like nationwide, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
211. Okay.
It's nationwide, yeah. but it can address your specific local
yeah,
resources.
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about it is that when you call, you're getting the 211 in your area code. And because of that, they do have local resources. And
that's really, really great. I bet a lot of people didn't know that was out there, Dr. Dunn. Hey, we're going to continue this fascinating conversation with Dr. Louise Dunn, director of the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline, right here in the Tower of Hope. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Dunn, we welcome your calls. The number is 714 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. It's not a crisis hotline today, but we would love to hear from you. I'm sure some of you have questions on how you can reach out and help somebody that is hurting right now, or maybe you're hurting and you would like to find a resource like this that you can call and talk it through. So really, really healthy instinct, I think, to sort of say, I need help and I'm going to look for a number and start, you know, like when somebody, when you say you get these suicidal calls, I think that's the first step. They know they need help, and so they're reaching out for help. And you are welcome to join the conversation. That number again is 714-282-6034. We are talking with Dr. Louise Dunn, director of the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline right here in the Tower of Hope. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hi there, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am Peggy Normandin, and we know that wintertime is a rough patch in the year for a lot of people. Days are shorter, light is dimmer, we shiver and often withdraw because of the cold weather, and we can get the blues. Our guest today runs an historic ministry here on the Christ Cathedral campus that helps people get through their personal breakdowns and meltdowns and those interior crises that plague the human race. Dr. Louise Dunn is the director of the New Hope Crisis Counseling Hotline, founded in 1968 by the good Reverend Schuller and his wife when this campus was his world-famous Crystal Cathedral. Dr. Dunn is also the chairperson of the Diocese of Orange's Mental Health Advisory Board. You know, Dr. Dunn, mentioning that you are the chairperson for the Diocese of Orange's Mental Health Advisory Board brings to mind a question I want to ask. So the Catholic Church has always advocated for all people with disabilities, but how well have we addressed, how well have churches, Christian churches across the board, addressed the needs of people who are suffering from mental disorders? Is this something that churches are starting to be more aware of and try to address and be proactive with?
Churches are starting to become more aware. I think historically it was always kind of seen as, well, that's something the professionals need to handle. And that if somebody came to their priest and said, I'm having some issues, that they would be inclined to say, well, it sounds like you need to talk to a counselor. Now we're working very hard to do stigma elimination, to get people to understand that one in four statistically people are dealing with some form of mental illness. And we always think of the scary things that we see on TV.
Right.
And most people who are dealing with mental illness are it's not even visible with many people, but they're really struggling inside.
Mm-hmm.
And who better than the church to be support to that person and to their family?
But sometimes it takes more schooled abilities and skills than just helping a person find a home or something like that. These mental issues can be, you know, very dangerous. And a lot of times if you see we used to have a little lady that came to the chapel during weekday masses, and she was clearly, you know, either bipolar or schizophrenic. And finally, somebody in the parish did kind of reach out. A couple of times she was sent to the emergency room. She just popped right out again. But somebody finally did, a doctor, I think, got her attached to the right help. And now she's doing really well.
Sure. It's more challenging with people who have psychosis. But you have to remember, mental illness covers a lot of other types of disorders, what we call personality disorders. And a lot of people just, they need help and support, especially people who are depressed, people who are going through dealing with anxiety. Anxiety disorders are very much on the rise in our country.
What do you attribute that to?
I attribute it to our fast pace, our concept that we need to multitask, that and social media and not having true relationships, people that you can really talk to about the things you're growing anxious about.
Well, what exactly does the diocese's Mental Health Advisory Board do? And I know you are the director of it. You're the president of it.
Yeah, I'm
the executive of
the chair.
The chair.
Our role, we were formed after Bishop Vann and Rick Warren had the original mental health conference down at Saddleback.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our realization as a diocese that although there are support groups and some different things throughout the parishes, that we needed a more centralized, comprehensive concept. That could go in a lot of directions. What we saw was necessary was some education and just getting out to the parishes to talk about what people are really dealing with. Some of the parishes formed some forums and brought in community people to talk, the police and psychologists and that kind of thing. And we're just helping any parish that's interested in doing that to grow their, what we just call their response to mental health.
Well, it also takes some government alliances too, because I think that people feel the some of the city governments and state governments should be building more resources available to these people.
Yeah, and a lot of times they are, and people just really don't know about it. And that's one of the big things is that they're here in Orange County, we're very, very blessed in Orange County, California, to have a lot of resources, but so many people don't even know they exist.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it, too, is getting information.
Well, we learned about that 211 number, didn't we, Jimmy G? That is fascinating, the number, just dialing 211, and they have a huge directory of resources that can send you to the right resource. Exactly. So, Dr. Dunn, how do you address the wide gamut of issues that people can call with? Because, you know, we address suicide because that's what you most associate a crisis hotline as addressing, as, you know, coping with. But there are people that call. Give us an example of some of a day in the life of the crisis hotline. What are some of the subjects people call and put forth?
We're going to have a lot of people who call who are just lonely. Seniors who are not connected to any people anymore, individuals that for whatever reason they're socially isolated. So that would be one type of call you would be sure.
And that's
at.
A person who just wants to talk and be listened to.
Right. And we can't spend a half an hour with that person when there may be somebody on the line that is in more serious.
A little urgent.
Yes. But at the same time, I think the fact that we are there, they can contact us because we're faith-based, we can pray with them.
Mm-hmm.
It may be the highlight of their day, and it may keep them from going into the depression that could cause more serious suicidal thinking.
Wow, that's just beautiful. And then, you know, the next call could be someone who is ready to, you know, pull their IV plugs out and say,
sure.
I'm done
and,
with life.
And people who've just, what I see is what crisis is about is you've just been hit with something unexpected. You go in and you get laid off the job you've had for 17 years.
Yeah.
Or your spouse comes in and says, I want a divorce. Or somebody that you love who's close to you dies, period, or dies unexpectedly, which is even takes a person off their feet. And I think people just get overwhelmed very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And they need somebody to talk things through just to start kind of building a plan or making sense out of it or just to have somebody walking with them through that issue.
Sometimes just talking it all out is very healthy and very therapeutic. And sometimes among our friends and family, the minute we start presenting or unfolding a problem, they want to solve it for us.
Oh, that you're so right.
Exactly.
Exactly, right.
Somebody non-biased. You know?
Yeah, so a third party that you can just sort of be completely candid with. And listen to you, and then in that articulation and that narrative, you will find, oh, I feel better already.
Somebody who doesn't need to tell their own story, who doesn't need to say, oh, well, you think that's bad.
Yeah.
Back in, you know, and then they have to kind of one up you.
Well, my goldfish died 2 years ago when I talked.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Dr. Dunn, we have a call from Akron, Ohio. Welcome to Call Me Catholic, Marie.
Well, hi, and I'm just thrilled to talk to you. Dr. Dunn has struck a note in my mind.
Is that right? Dr. Dunn has struck a note with many people, Marie, I'm sure. So,
yes.
Thanks for calling in.
My, situation is I have more than partial sight. I belong to the Akron Blind Club. We have a wonderful director named Scott. And, we were speaking like, not really a gripe session, but people were throwing out their feeling, you know.
Sure.
They had to get cut back to one day a week. And it seems like these statements came from several gentlemen that are totally blind, and I can understand the depression because I can still see. I can't read well. So one of them was really adamant about he hates when they go down to one day a week because this is his family. He's accepted
mm-hmm.
here,
mm-hmm.
which is true. You know how people usually avoid people with disabilities.
Right.
So he said that he couldn't wait for the days to pick up again 3 days a week because he was so lonely for his family, his support group. And I thought, uh-oh, there's depression. And I just happened to be, I'm not Catholic, but I love to listen to your station because I learned so much.
Well, we're glad you're with us, Marie.
And I turned that on and I thought, wow, that makes me think of those guys down there. And I just wondered, would I be allowed to have that phone number if I just gave it to the director and didn't pass it around? You know, so you get a lot of people calling you, but, you know, he knows these people very well. He's a great people person, and that might be something that could be offered to someone who seems to be very depressed.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the New Hope number, which is 714, just New Hope, it spells out New Hope.
714 N-E-W-H-O-P-E.
Correct. And
well,
that's
could you possibly give
the numbers?
It's 714-639
H-O-P-E. What are those numbers, Jimmy?
Honestly.
Yeah, because they have apparatuses that tell them the number. And
okay.
So I'll have to, okay.
You know what? I'm going to list it on the Facebook page. Do you go to Facebook at all, Marie?
I don't have a computer because I can't read the font.
Okay, we've got it now. Somebody solved the problem.
Give it to me. The people down there that have Braille computers.
Oh, okay.
Okay, here we go.
I can give you a full number now. It's 714-639-4673.
You got it, Marie?
Yes, and I want to tell you that I am so proud of the achievements these people have made. The director's got all kinds of classes for them, and one lady made 176 knit them blind.
Wow.
Caps for kids for school that don't have clothing, you know.
Yeah.
This one lady is knitting, I don't know how they... I'm looking with my eyes and I can't figure out how to.
Well, bless their hearts. You know, those are people taking a proactive stand and doing something with their life and staying busy and engaging their hands and their minds and loving the fellowship together. Dr. Dunn, what would you say to somebody who had this kind of a support group for 3 days a week and it was reduced down to one? You know, how would you advise them to kind of occupy themselves with that void?
Well, depending on the situation with the person, but definitely to reach out to anywhere that they can connect. I do realize for people that are disabled, it's much harder. But, you know, that's where outreach to churches, there are actually statistics that show that people that are involved in their churches live longer, about 10 years longer on average.
Right.
And so that connection is really important. Sometimes there are social centers and things. It depends a lot on where you live. I don't know the resources as well out in the Ohio area. But,
thank you for that, and
thank you for your being so conscious of the fact that this individual was evidencing depression. A lot of people
would
have
picked up on that. That shows a lot of empathy, Marie. That's beautiful.
A lot of wonderful people. Nobody would believe it. They should come and visit us sometime.
Well, yeah. I love Akron, Ohio. I think that's the meat of the country right there, Marie. So God bless you, and stay the course,
thank
my
you.
Friend. Thanks for calling in.
And God bless you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marie. You know, we got another question on either online or from a caller that just left a question, Dr. Dunn. They wanted to know how they could find somebody in central or southern Maine who was practicing therapy as a Catholic, you know, a Catholic therapist in Maine. Is there a resource out there for people who specifically want to seek out professionals who are Catholic in the psychology department or, you know, in the business of psychology or therapy?
Oh, generally, you can contact the diocese and go through your priest, but also going back to 211, when you call 211 for referrals, you can tell them that you're specifically looking for a Catholic therapist because Catholic therapists will list that on their websites. And so 211 would have that information in any area.
211 keeps coming up. Okay, I want to just take 1 minute, depart from, take a little side route here, a little detour for a minute, about another resource. I want to take a minute to tell you about WINGS, which is the EWTN newsletter. I bet some of you didn't even know we have a weekly newsletter that shares all the latest dirt on EWTN programming, TV and radio, as well as great book reviews and blogs from different Catholic personalities. It's a very fun and a very informational resource, a veritable gift to your inbox every week. EWTN.com/wings. Wings highlights different products from the EWTN religious catalog every week, covers news and feature stories. This is really the best way to stay in touch with all the goings on with the EWTN network. network. I mean, we're all family here, and we have to stay in touch with each other, stay informed. So be sure and sign up for this free subscription. Go to EWTN.com/wings. Okay, Dr. Dunn, I want to talk about your volunteers. Now, how many how many people are in your core of volunteers right now? Because other than you, it is all driven by volunteers.
That's correct. And right now, we only have 40 volunteers. I know that sounds like a lot, but when you're trying to cover
24/7,
and so we have very thin shifts and gaps, and we're basically needing people very, very, very desperately right now.
Because you had, I think you were explaining to me earlier, that you had this core group of volunteers that are now kind of, after maybe 2 decades, are kind of phasing out because they're getting too
old. We were very, very fortunate in the early days of New Hope that people would come and stay 25, 30 years. Believe it or not, we have one volunteer who has been with us for 50 years.
Oh, you mean just like an original founding member then?
Yeah, and you know, you know, if that person's been with us 50 years, they're not 45.
They're not 21.
So
anymore.
What happens is people, you know, literally get into their 80s and their 90s. A lot of our folks got to that age, and a lot of them were kind of in that age group together, and we lost many people in about a 2-year period. So rebuilding that core is important. We've got great volunteers, the volunteers we have with us. But to get those phone calls answered timely and to provide the support to the volunteers, they need to have shift workers with them.
But you need qualified volunteers. You don't need just anybody that says, okay, what do you need? I can do it. You know, put me to work. No, you need somebody that, that fits a certain profile, I would suspect.
Yeah, it really has more to do with personality. People come in and they say, oh, you know, I'm not a psychology student and that kind of thing. Really, that, because we're peer counselors, that's not what's important. But it is a person who is by nature compassionate and caring. The kind of person that you say, I don't know what it is, but I'm in the grocery store and people come up and tell me their life story.
It's just
something that people see that you're safe.
An openness.
But you also have to have a resilience to step into a serious situation, be able to step back out, take a breath, and go on to the next call. That's something that can be developed. But for a person that, you know, the calls make them cry, that's not going to work for them. A little bit of tears is okay, but if you're, you know, sobbing harder than the caller, that's not really good.
Then you all need help.
Yeah.
then everybody needs help. So somebody that is compassionate, but also strong and you know, can keep it together, so to speak, and somebody that's a good listener, I would imagine, and an informed listener. Like, you're not just, yeah. You're actually listening, and you're listening for cues and clues.
Yeah, the active listening is much more than just listening. It's a combination of asking open questions, reflecting the person's feelings by picking up on what's going on, also doing summaries for them so that they can see what the issues really are, helping them to hone in on priorities that perhaps that particular things, like if somebody's looking for work, you know, what's today's priority? What can you do today now?
Well, you were telling that me that you like to have 4 people in there at a shift, which is a lot of people. And you said because there's a lot of calls coming in, and that when the calls can't get picked up right away, that the callers get discouraged. And that's
absolutely
contributing that to their problem.
Breaks my heart that sometimes I'll have a message where somebody says, I've been trying to get through to your hotline, and they leave a number. I'll call them back and say, well, you know, here's some times that there's better coverage.
Well, do you have like a voice? Does it go to a voicemail then?
That would be awful. It goes to,
hello, you have reached the New Hope Crisis.
Well, it does. It goes to a message, essentially that repeats, saying that, all of our counselors are currently helping other callers and, we'll reach your call as soon as possible.
So it's not like, you know, press 1 if you feel suicidal.
No,
press
no.
2 if you lost a job recently.
And if the person hangs on, eventually somebody picks up. But to understand that if they're on a suicide call or a serious call, that can be a very long call. Mm-hmm. And if a person's on by themselves, that is not good. So that's what we're doing right now, is building up our team. And got a training class coming up, as a matter of
fact. Well, if somebody in our local Orange County area were interested in talking to you about becoming a volunteer, where would you direct them? How can they contact you?
They can contact me at my email, ldunn@newhopenow.org.
All right, we'll list that on our Facebook page, too.
Ldunn, yeah, newhopenow.org. Or you can call me directly.
Call the hotline.
Well, you can call the hotline, but it might take you a while to get through. You might prefer to
blocking up the lines for people that need help
directly.
Getting back to the volunteers, because I think this is kind of fascinating. You use certain kinds of people during certain hours of the day, like in the middle of the night. Would the calls be more of a dark nature, a more serious nature? So maybe you'd use specific kind of people that are good with those kinds of calls?
It really doesn't work quite that way. What it is, the volunteers pick their shifts.
Okay.
And so people who pick the night shifts, a couple of things, they're night owls for one thing, and they're people that don't really require other people on their shift. Some people come in, it's a social thing for them as well as mission. But the night shifts almost always are covered just by one person. We really don't have a higher volume of calls at night. People think that.
But they might be graver at night.
they can
be. Because
in
the middle of the night, that's when things trouble us the most. It's like, I can't find an answer to this. I can't sleep. It's bothering.
Yeah,
as
far as for anxiety and that kind of thing, the interesting thing, though, is with depression, it actually, the highest volume of suicides is Monday morning.
Oh.
Usually about 7 a.m. Because people start thinking about their week and the things that are troubling them, and maybe they had a good weekend with family, now they're alone again, and things become actually more overwhelming at that time. The night calls are the people that can't sleep because, yes, mm-hmm. there are things on their mind. And
really, in the middle of the night, things seem unresolvable. You wake up in the morning and you think, why was I so worried about that last night?
Yeah, it can be that way.
Yeah. Do you find that men address the callers differently than women? Or that age
yes.
makes a difference in how they treat the callers?
Yes. And men and women do have different counseling styles. Men get more to the point. So it takes a really special man to be one of our counselors. The men that we have are wonderful because they have to be extra patient and not jump in to fix things, which is a little bit more part of the male personality. Women are very comfortable with just talking and listening and emoting. So it does take a special kind of man, but the male callers especially appreciate our male counselors.
Sure. So will you sort of, if a male caller comes in and says, I really need to talk to a man, he's going to understand my problem, can you then you would put him in touch with a man? I mean, if somebody calls in with an issue and you know there's a person on call right then that takes these calls really better than another
sure.
person, you would.
Sure. We would transfer that call. Generally, we don't transfer calls. Our feeling is, whoever receives the call, that's, we don't want to reject that person and have them think, oh, there must be something wrong with me. They transfer me to the supervisor. but if we have somebody on who speaks a language that person needs spoken,
right.
or if we have somebody on who is male and it's a male caller, that's an appropriate transfer. So we would certainly do that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what about age? Do you, on both ends of things, do you find that there are ages that are just ripe for crises, that you get a lot of this type of age? Or, and on the other hand, do you find that certain age is really good? Like, you can't be too young because you just don't understand life's issues as profoundly as maybe someone who's older.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we've had some young counselors who are very deep souls. They've had a lot that's mm-hmm. happened in their life. So it really has a lot to do with what kinds of issues have you gone through in your life. A young person can be that person. You can have an older person who's had kind of a sheltered life and, sort of a charmed life that maybe doesn't have that same depth. There's no question, though, our older counselors, they have a certain wisdom, a certain mm-hmm. life wisdom. But it really has to do with people that have been through heartaches and people who have had losses, people who have faced major challenges in their life. It deepens their compassion, and that's the biggest thing, is that compassion. Having life experience sometimes leads you to want to giving advice, and that's actually not what we do.
No, you don't want to do that.
but it really gets back to the person's actual emotional experiences.
In preparing for this conversation, which I just find it so fascinating, I was looking up whether or not there is a propensity in some states, if some states have more of these kinds of personal crises and mental issues than others. And it was quite dramatic. It listed Massachusetts as the number one state for dealing with mental illness and personal breakdowns and those kinds of things. And the state that has the least issues is Nevada. I thought that was kind of fascinating.
That is interesting.
Hey, that's just leaving very unschooled information here, but I found that online and I thought that was kind of interesting. California falls somewhere in the middle. Glad to know the Southwest had a few there that are solid citizens in the Southwest. Hey, Dr. Louise Dunn, thank you so much for sharing your ministry with us today. It has been fascinating and we are so grateful that you do what you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
We will list all the resources and information on our Facebook page. So go on board with our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic, and give us a like. You know, we want to be liked. We're not at a point of crisis about it, but we do want to be liked and accepted.
I would encourage our regular listeners to take the phone number that you give out, Peggy, and maybe put it in their smartphone or jot it down for next week, because I think we're getting a couple of calls through right now, but it's too late to put
it's
you on the
late.
Air.
Too late. No, I'm sorry.
So get that number down.
It's 714-282-6034. It's the same every week, 714-282-6034. So next week, you can jump into the conversation. You'll be equipped with the phone number. Hey, you know that Call Me Catholic is followed every Saturday by Barbara McGuigan and The Good Fight for 2 hours of great pro-life conversation. Go pro-lifers. This is a big week for them. But mostly we want you to tune in again next week for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I am Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.